Welcome back to the Hemingway List. What a strong start that was. The podcast where we do things the Hemingway. I went straight in there for the first word of the podcast and had a frog in my throat. Is that what you call it? Who knows? Little treat for today. I believe we have a guest reader, the lovely Nifty Rific, reading chapter 23 for us today, so that's a treat. But first, let's talk about chapter 22. Now we've got a scandal on our hands. What do you think of the bombshell dropped in chapter 22? Jan Brunt said, got the metaphor between Anna and Frou Frou correct. No, wait, sorry, I read that wrong. Swim said the mum a fishy said, Jan Brunt got the metaphor between Anna and Frou Frou correct. Per lit charts, the leaf shaking in Anna's hand emphasizes her nervousness, like Frou Frou, who is animated and lively just under the surface. Anna's emotions are barely contained. There we go. We're spot on about that. The description of the horse meant to be a parallel for the description of Anna. Swim said the mama fishy also said, what I want to know is how they even managed to get a loan to even do the deed that got her pregnant. From what I read about this time period is that the aristocracy was surrounded by their bevy of servants everywhere. Though I guess she would have ordered her servants not to disturb them, but that certainly must have set the tongues wagging. So I guess no wonder this affair was an open secret. The description of Anna's son's feelings, inimical, what a great word, and Vronsky's reaction to him was brilliant. Karenin must have gone off to a spa since he took the waters. Inimical.
Inimical.
Oh, I'm sneezing. Sorry, it's the beginning of spring here in Australia and I've got some serious hay fever stuff going on. Inimical. Tending to obstruct or harm. I am Norwegian, said Anna. I did not expect you. This is another instance of the nuance between TY and VY, tie and vi, being lost in translation. Anna hesitated between when choosing if she should go with the more formal or familiar address. She ended up going with the familiar and casual tie rather than vi. Thank you, Bartlett. Vronsky just speaks in a language without that nuance. Now we've got a scandal. What do you think of the bombshell? It feels like the plot is really ramping up into motion, which is exciting. I wonder if Anna and Alexei Alandrovich's relationship has been such that he's going to be able to puzzle out the dates and that the child is not his. That's only going to be relevant if Anna drags her feet about the situation, but either way, it's a ticking time bomb. To follow up, says Swim, said the mama fishy, Vronsky speaks to Anna in French, as you in Russian is either too intimate or too cold. Also, most of the servants probably don't understand French, kind of telling that Anna uses the intimate Russian, you, and Vronsky avoids the whole dilemma by speaking French. Right, yeah, too intimate or too cold, so she had to use either the one that was, too formal, or the one that was that kind of implied that they were too close. It was a difficult conundrum. Techrific says, Anda. Frou Frou is French onomatopoeia for a rustle. So it's a lessonic hint at the swiftness, I guess. It could be, or maybe it's got to do with that quivering like a leaf thing of Anna. You know, the rustling. I just put that together in my head because I'm a brainiac. At this junction, I'd like to gauge everybody's feelings about the relationship between Vronsky and Anna. For Vronsky, it seems he's starting to feel trapped or at least worried by the relationship and its potential dangerous effects, so his intention is to end it or what. But then at the house, he quickly forgets as he contemplates seeing her in the flesh. Again, insert Monty Python's Michael Palin saying, nudge, nudge, now what I mean, know what I mean. And it turns again when he considers her son and all that her son's hostile looks encompass. Vronsky is tossed and turned by complicated emotions about Anna, and we don't know what's about to happen. Until we're hit with a bombshell. He's speaking French to her. Of course he is. No, but seriously, Anna is pregnant, and all Vronsky's doubts are swept away. She must divorce. He's to make an honourable woman of her. If we didn't know beforehand, we now know we're deep inside a tragedy unfolding before our eyes. It's a train wreck of a situation. Somebody needs to explain Anna's behaviour to me. At first, she seems scared, upset, and frightened. Even, and then she becomes calm from divulging the truth, perhaps. And she even smiles at Vronsky's suggestion of a divorce. She's collected, cool, and wiser, or pretending to be. Older people often do that. Both Anna and Vronsky's moods are swinging so much it's like I'm three again and sitting on a seesaw and Mum and Dad are peek-booing me alternatively. I don't know what to make of it all. Okay. Weird analogy, but we'll go with it. JMama8779 says, good analysis. It's a roller coaster of emotion for both of them, I'm sure. I'd like to add that Vronsky began as a womanizer, but wants to make an honourable woman out of her. I'm a bit sceptical that he'd stick around for the long haul, given what we've seen about him so far. It will be interesting how they both navigate the waters going forward. The cat's out of the bag. Someone cue the chant. Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. The cat is out of the bag. What a scandal. I love it. I love a good scandal. What's going to happen? Has he gotten himself in over his head, you know? Like, is that what's going on here? He didn't really intend to make it into anything serious, but oh dear, look what's happening. Is that it? Or was he just rushing in foolishly? AtomicGecko7 said, I loved the swift justice for Vronsky constructed within this chapter. We start out with Vronsky trying to surprise Anna by showing up at her house. And at the end of the chapter, Vronsky is the one who is flawed. More importantly, we also learn how Vronsky views Anna's son, and children in general, as an inconvenient moral compass despite the clunky metaphor, who stands in the way of true love. And at the end of it, we find that he has another on the way. With a winky emoji there when talking about the clunky metaphor. I think I might have made a comment in yesterday's podcast about him going a little bit too far with the clunky compass metaphor. Did I? I can't remember. I feel like I probably did. Nifty Rific says, my reaction to the bombshell was to refresh on Victorian birth control methods and came across this click me and I laughed. What is this click me? Risky click. It's a picture of a woman fighting a giant stork with an umbrella. She's beating it with an umbrella. And, of course, the stork has a satchel around its neck with a little baby in it. He's trying to deliver a baby and she's trying to beat it away. And the caption says, and the villain still pursues her. And it's a very old-fashioned looking drawing. Like, she's in a big long dress with like frills on it and a big huge fascinator hat. Victorian era, it says, actually, on the caption. Cool. I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of looking up ancient birth controls. but I'm glad someone did. Yeah, silly business. Why would you have an affair and then accidentally get pregnant? Come on. I mean, I know back then it was probably much easier to happen, but ugh, foolish behaviour. All right, at this juncture, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not doing tonight's reading because my brain's not working tonight. I don't know if you noticed me stumbling through reading those comments, but yeah, really, really not having much brain luck today. At this juncture, I got to look up if juncture is a word. Is juncture the word I'm trying to say right now? Why is my brain not working? A particular point in events or time. A place where things juncture. Join. Juncture. That's the word. Why am I so confused? At this juncture of the podcast, we're going to hand it over to Nifty Rific, who will do a much better job of reading Chapter 3 than I ever could. Also, I meant to say, chapter 23. Oh my God. Okay, that's it for me for tonight. Clearly, I need to go and see a doctor about my brain not working. Enjoy the chapter. Thanks, Nifty Rific, for the reading. See you guys tomorrow.
Hey, everyone. I almost said my real name. It's Nifty Rific. Nifty Rific, and I'm going to read for you chapter 23 of Anna Karenina. Chapter 23. Vronsky had tried several times before, though never so definitely as now, to lead her on to a discussion of her position, and had always encouraged the same superficiality and lightness of judgment with which she now replied to his challenge. It was as if there was something that she could not and would not make clear to herself, or as if as soon as she began to speak about this matter, she, the real Anna, withdrew into herself and another woman appeared, who was strange and alien to him, whom he feared and did not like, and who resisted him. But today he decided to speak out. "Whether he knows or not," said Vronsky in his usual firm, calm tone, "that is not our business. We cannot, you cannot remain as you are, especially now. And what would you have? I add words. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to try not to do that anymore. Okay. What would you have me do?" she asked with the same light irony. She, who had so feared that he might take her pregnancy too lightly, now felt vexed that he deduced there from the necessity of doing something. "Tell him everything. Leave him." "Very well, suppose I do so," she said. "Do you know what the result will be? I will tell you all in advance." And an evil light came into her eyes, which a minute before had been so tender. "Ah, you love another and have entered into a guilty union with him?" Mimicking her husband, she laid just stress on the word guilty, as Karenin himself would have done. "I warned you of the consequences from the religious, civil, and family points of view. You have not listened to me. Now I cannot allow my name to be dishonored." "My name and my son," she was going to say, but could not jest about her son. "My name to be dishonored, and something else of that kind," she added. "In short, he will tell me clearly and precisely in his official manner that he cannot let me go, but will take what measures he can to prevent a scandal, and he will do what he says quietly and accurately. That is what will happen. He is not a man, but a machine, and a cruel machine when angry," she added, picturing Karenin to herself with every detail of his figure and way of speaking, setting against him everything bad she could find in him and forgiving him nothing on account of the terrible fault toward him of which she was guilty. "But Anna," said Vronsky, persuasively and gently, trying to pacify her, "he must be told all the same, and afterward her action will be guided by his attitude. What then, run away?" "And why not run away? I think it is impossible to continue in this way, and not on my account. I see that you suffer." "Yes, run away, and for me to live as your mistress," she said maliciously. "Anna," he murmured with reproachful tenderness. "Yes," she continued, "become your mistress and ruin my everything." She was again going to say "son," but she could not utter the word. Vronsky could not understand how she, with her strong, honest nature, could endure this state of deception and not wish to escape from it, but he did not guess that the chief cause lay in the one word "son," which she could not bring herself to utter. When she thought about her son and his future relations with the mother who had left his father, she was so terrified at what she had done that she did not reason, but womanlike only, tried to comfort herself with false arguments and words in order that everything should remain as before, and that she might forget the dreadful question of what would happen to her son. "I beg you, I entreat you," she said suddenly in quite an altered tone, sincerely and tenderly, taking him by the hand, "never speak to me about that." "But Anna." "Never, leave it to me. I know all the degradation, all the horror of my position, but it is not so easy to settle the matter as you think. Leave it to me and listen to me. Never speak to me about it. Do you promise?" "Yes, yes, promise." "I promise everything, but I cannot be at peace, especially after what you have told me. I cannot be at peace when you are not." "I," she said, "yes, I do suffer sometimes, but it will pass if you never speak to me about it. It is only when you speak to me about it that I suffer." "I don't understand," said he. "I know," she interrupted him, "how hard it is for your honest nature to lie, and I pity you. I often think how you have ruined your life because of me." "I was just thinking the same," he said, "wondering how you could sacrifice everything for my sake. I cannot forgive for your unhappiness. I unhappy, she said, drawing near to him and gazing at him with a smile of rapturous love. I am like a hungry man to whom food has been given. He may be cold, his clothes may be ragged, and he may be ashamed, but he is not unhappy. I unhappy, no, this is my happiness. But she heard the voice of her son approaching, and glancing quickly round the veranda, she rose hurriedly. Her eyes kindled with the light Vronsky knew so well, and with a rapid motion she raised her lovely hands, covered with rings, seized his head, gave him a long look, lifted her face with parting smiling lips, quickly kissed his mouth and both eyes, and then pushed him away. She was about to go, but he held her back. When, he whispered, gazing rapturously at her. Tonight at one, she whispered, and with her quick, light step went to meet her son. Sarosa, however you say his name, had been caught in the rain in the public gardens, and he and his nurse had taken shelter in the pavilion. Well, au revoir, she said to Vronsky. It will soon be time to start for the races. Betsy has promised to call for me. Vronsky looked at his watch and hurried away. Y'all, I didn't want to hold the reading of the chapter hostage to just talk about nonsense, but I wanted to say that's why I waited to the end, and that's why I'm telling you this now. I found this YouTube channel by this most darling man, and his name is, I'm trying to pull this up, Jeff Hirio? Hirio? It's Jeff, J-E-F-F-H-E-R-I-O-T. I found him when we were reading The Enormous Room, and I was looking up banyan nuts because I was curious about them. And we were talking about the flora and fauna of Australia and how diverse and dangerous it is. So I wanted to see videos of people cooking banyan nuts. And I was actually looking up like banyan nuts killing people. It's macabre. I'm sorry. And anyway, ended up finding this precious YouTube channel that you have to look at. And this Jeff Hirio fella here, he says, okay, let me go to the about. It says that he's in Burrum, Australia. I don't know how far away that is from Ander. I guess I could get a map, because aren't you in Melbourne? Anyway, let me look it up. Map. Burrum, Australia. Okay. I mean, relative to all the other places in Australia, I'd say that's not too terribly far away. Okay, so this fella, Jeff Hirio, is in Burrum, Australia. And his videos are of him cooking. It says, we're in Burrum, Australia. Our channel is about the food we grow, catch, and produce for ourselves. My beekeeping, fishing, cooking, bread baking, and some native wildlife visitors in our own backyard. And I mean, come on. Anywhere there's people posting this stuff on YouTube, it doesn't matter. But, it's just, he's from Australia, and I found him, and he has the most darling videos. And, like, some of them are called Honeybees Going... I just clicked off.
It's Jeff at Butterham. It's the next day Butterham. After your 21.
Honeybees going mental on dragon fruit. So going mental on dragon fruit. And then I watched him bake this bread one time. It was like banana bread with black cherries. And I was like, I'm going to make that. I'm looking at his other videos. Oh, and I watched him. He has some pineapple video where he uses every part of a pineapple, and that was absolutely fascinating. And I'm not making fun, I loved it. He's the most precious darling thing, and he hasn't posted a video in 2 years, and I want to know why. This other video, I was trying to find, I want him to be my grandfather. Please watch this man, Andrew, go find this man and tell him to post more videos. It's been 2 years. There was like a kookaburra one. Like, it was titled like Kookaburra Going Crazy. Where are you at? One Hungry Kookaburra. And it's like a video of him tilling some soil and like just scooping up some worms for this kookaburra. It's wonderful. I love it.